Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. This week we have something a little bit different planned. We weren't able to get with Adam to record an actual podcast, but luckily this weekend at Maker Faire, he did his annual keynote. It was 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. He did it from the top of the iconic Maker Faire mousetrap, and he had some interesting stuff to say about, well, I'll just let you listen.
Look, most years I've come with somewhat of a prepared talk and then kind of winged it. This year, shall I talk louder? All right, how's that? Is that a little better? Bring my volume up? Okay, the people in the back are, it's what it is at this point. If you can turn me up a little for the people in the back, then please do. So this year I was thinking, what can I talk about? And I thought, well, what about lists? Humans have loved lists since Moses. So I thought, maybe 10 commandments of making. I wanted to talk about 10 commandments of making. And so I wrote them down. I came up with 9, unfortunately. And things never quite turn out the way that you planned. But in the end, on my way down, I came up with the 10th. So finally, I have a list of 10 solid things that I would have loved someone to tell me when I first started burning and cutting myself in order to have the things that I needed to have. The first rule of making, I will say, is make something, anything. Cook, weld, carve, sculpt, anything that you need to make. It's important that you make it. Humans do two things that make us unique from all other animals. We use tools and we tell stories. And when you make something, you're doing both at once. You're telling a story about your desire. You're telling a story about something that you want. You're telling a story about something that you see needs to be made. And you are using your tools to improve yourself and improve the world around you. When you make new things, you are joining in the most ancient dialogue that humans have ever had. So, commandment the first, make something, make anything. It may feel like it's totally insignificant, but it's vital that you do it. Number two, make something occasionally that actually improves your life. From a toilet paper holder that actually works to a toaster that's slightly improved. When you make something that you use every day as opposed to something that's useless, I can't even tell you how good it feels. Even like a handle on a drawer. You make a handle on a drawer and you're using it every single day. The patina of your use that it gets feels really good. Again, and it's another story. Okay, here's one. There's a million different skills being displayed out here. And I'm sure a lot of you are walking around and thinking, I wish I could do that. I wish I had that skill. Several of these commandments have to do with skills. The thing is that a lot of times we stop ourselves from moving forward with a project because we don't know how to weld or we don't know carpentry. And my advice is start now. Start right now to do the thing that you want to do. There is no time like right now. And do it with the things in front of you. If you want to weld a car frame, but you don't have a welder or a car or a frame, go ahead and mock it up out of oak tag and cardboard. There's a beautiful sculptor here in the Bay Area who made himself a 747 out of manila file folders. It's one of the loveliest things I've ever seen. Four, yes. I can't learn any skills unless I have a project to learn with. I need a goal. I need something. Well, it's like I need to need something. I need the thing that I'm trying to attain. I can't learn to weld just by someone showing me that it should sound like frying eggs and you set the dials like this. I need to end up with Wolverine claws or a sword or a pair of stilts or something like that. Always try to find a project that will get you interested in the thing that you want to build. Can everyone still hear me?
Yeah!
Awesome. All right. Almost halfway there. 5. Ask. Ask questions. Ask for help. Ask for advice. Ask for feedback. You'll find when you make stuff that it actually kind of makes you vulnerable to ask for feedback, because it totally does. But if you find someone you trust, hey, I can't help you back there. I'm trying with the Frisbees. I'm talking as loud as I can. Ask for advice. And when you find someone you trust, ask for feedback. I'll tell you, it's very funny. Among adults, we rarely actually turn to each other and say, what do you think of the work that I'm doing? And it's because that places us in a very vulnerable spot. But again, if you can find a teacher or a mentor or someone whose opinion you really respect, asking them very specifically about how they think you're doing can give you incredible insight. I've done it a few times in my life, and every single time I've gotten a tremendous perspective on what I was actually doing. Share. Now, there's a lot of talk about the sharing economy. I'm sure Etsy is totally present here at Maker Faire. And we trade stuff and we trade knowledge. That is really, really important. There is nothing that makes me angrier when somebody does something beautiful and you ask how it's done and they say it's a secret. No secrets. What are you protecting? Nobody's gonna take your technique and then steal your idea. Nobody has a monopoly on being you. And if you think that your technique is what makes you interesting, you're being ridiculous. So share your techniques, because when you do, someone's gonna come back to you with a better way of doing it, and you're gonna learn something from them. 7, please recognize that discouragement and failure are part of every single make project. Not something that happens every now and then. In every single project, you will find yourself discouraged and you will fail at some point. If you recognize that, boy, these balcony railings are terrifying. If you recognize that you're going to fail, at least when it's about to happen, when you are getting discouraged because you hit a snag and you don't have the part and it's Sunday night and it's 4 a.m., at least then you know that that's part of what's going to happen, and that the next morning it may be a little harder to get started, but if you know that mechanism, you can actually keep going. I personally, and I've said this many times before, whenever I'm making something, about 70% of the way in, I actually think I have no idea what I'm doing and I hate what I'm building. And Fellini even said that he knows that one of his films is almost finished when he totally despises it. And frankly, that 70, 80, 90% mark, the closer you get to the end, the more scared I get. Because it turns out that I hate finishing things. I'd much rather keep working on them and keep getting that endorphin rush of the eBay research and finding that part that I didn't know existed. Actually getting all the way to the end is a little bit difficult. But if you recognize what your mechanism is, where the places you'll get frustrated, they are your friends. You can welcome them in. This is also part of mindfulness and meditation. Understand that those thoughts are going to happen and embrace them. Look, they still are going to suck. I'm not going to lie to you. It sucks to fail. It hurts to cut yourself, but it's going to happen in every single project. 8, measure carefully. So, for those of you, okay, so I just want to point out, there's a drone here. These drones flying around are being operated by real professionals. They're doing safety tests here, so please do not worry about them. These guys are taking some great footage. This is the 3D guys, right? Chris Anderson's company. Measure carefully. So, for the younger builders in the audience, when you have two things that fit tightly together, that's called a close tolerance. When you have two things that fit loosely together, that is a loose tolerance. Knowing the prioritization, knowing when to use a tight tolerance and a loose tolerance, is pretty much everything that separates the expert from the novice. I have messed up so many projects. Even 3 days ago, I screwed up a project because I tried to work with tolerances that were too tight. It's just, you have to know where you can be tight and where you can be loose. Measuring carefully is the way you do that. Number 9.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 7th annual Battle Pond.
And that's happening too. Number 9, make things for other people. I can't even describe to you how much pleasure I get when I make something and then I give it to somebody else and they get a story, they get the thing that I've made, they get the fruit of a couple of hours of my time and concentration, and they get to possess it. There, it does make you vulnerable when you give your stuff away. You should recognize that. Giving your stuff away does actually place you in a slightly vulnerable position, but it is also a really magical one. So occasionally, when you're making stuff, give it away. Give it to other people.
go right up high, as high as you can.
Number 10. Now, if I could go back in time, in a time machine, and tell my young self one thing about making that I really wished I'd known at the beginning and would have saved a lot of money, time, and hurt bent fingers. The last commandment, use more cooling fluid. Yes, cold metal cuts much better than hot metal. Those are my 10 commandments of making. I would now like to spend the remaining half hour of my time taking questions from the audience, especially young makers, but we've got some microphones down there. Do we have some microphones down there?
Right there.
This man with a megaphone has a microphone. Raise your hand if you have a question. There we go. Young man in yellow sneakers.
How do you make drones?
Where are your parents? Because the look on your face tells me that you're trouble. You're the grandmother. You don't look nearly old enough to be a grandmother. How do you make drones? Yes, sir.
Is it possible to be on Titan in a warm suit and a respirator? Walk around.
On Titan?
Titan, the moon of Saturn.
Is it possible to be on Titan, the moon, and Saturn in a respirator?
Respirator in a warm suit.
You're confusing me with someone who knows science and things like that. I have this TV show in which I hurt myself every week, and I annoy this weird Aspie guy with a mustache.
Oh, yeah, Jamie?
Yes. How did I become a partner with Jamie? Well, I started out by actually being Jamie's employee, which was great for a couple of years, and then I couldn't stand him as a boss anymore. And I moved on to Industrial Light Magic. Jamie gave me my first job in special effects here in the Bay Area back in 1993, probably 15 years before you were born. And I cut my teeth in commercials, in working on tight deadlines with no money and no time. And that was the greatest training I could ever have. Yes, after this, I will be signing autographs for an hour over at the, where am I signing autographs? I'm signing autographs nearby for an hour after this. So come on up and bring your stuff and I'll sign in and talk to me. Okay, where's that megaphone? Raise your hand. Who's got the little girl behind you? Louder, sweetie.
The Mythbusters zombie special thing.
Ah, the zombie special. I love the zombie special.
What does it feel like to get hit with a paintball gun?
I was really afraid you were going to take us to task for screwing up that whole zombie episode. Because we kind of did. Paintball guns suck. They really, really, really hurt. They leave bruises that last for a while, that are this perfect circle. I don't understand why paintball is actually a hobby. I don't like pain. This young man right over here. What college did I go to? I love this question. I got a high school diploma in 1985 from Sleepy Hollow High School. And then I spent 6 months pretending to go to New York University. It turns out, I was in commercials when I was a kid. I played in a Charmin commercial when I was 15 years old. And I didn't know that commercial ever aired anywhere. But about 10 years ago, someone told me, no, I know that it aired because I saw it. So I figured if it aired, I must have gotten some money for it, but I don't remember getting paid. So I called up my mom and I said, did I ever get paid for that Charmin commercial? She said, yeah, you made $15,000. And I was like, seriously, where's that money? And she said, you remember the year you spent pretending to go to NYU? So I figured, I immediately was released of my guilt for having sponged rent off my parents for about 5 years. Because I think they made out on the deal. Okay, another question? No, down front over here. Where did I what? Where did I get the idea for Mythbusters? Amazingly, it wasn't my idea. It was the idea of this Australian producer. Jamie and I were originally hired. Well, they had a slightly different concept for the show when they began. Jamie and I were hired to be on-screen talent, but they kind of built some of the structure of the show based off our demo reel that we sent them. Now 12 freaking years ago. This young woman right here. Yes. Wait, what's the second part of your question?
Are there any myths that you would want to do?
Oh, do I have any? Well, you know, what is my favorite myth? You know, it's so hard. It's so hard. There are so many categories of amazing stuff that we have gotten to do over the years. We have gotten to, I've gotten to fly in the back of an F-18 Hornet and throw up 7 times and pass out twice. And frankly, that did not diminish how much fun I was having, even a little bit. I got to hand feed an octopus that fell in love with me and left octopus hickeys all the way up to my shoulder for 45 minutes. I got to slide on a 200-foot water slide and fly 70 feet through the air. I mean, the chronicle of weird crap that we've done over the years. I will say that we have actually been part of 6 or 7 published papers where real scientists have actually used our show, collaborated with us. Drain disaster, bullets fired up. There are several different stories we've done in which we've actually done real science, and I'm very proud of that. But for me, one of my all-time favorite things we ever did was make a 14-foot diameter balloon out of 28 pounds of rolled lead. It is the most ridiculous and useless thing you could possibly do with lead. There's a reason they don't make balloons out of them. But the fact that we did it, it's getting really windy up here. The fact that we did it is so satisfying, and the mental process of doing it. You know, when we film something, the editors kind of have an expectation of what they're going to get, right? So they think, oh, it's an exciting story like explosives. That's going to be a long story. It's a boring story about making a balloon out of lead. That's going to be a short story. And the lead balloon was one of the longest stories we ever cut. We showed them a new way how to do it. Where's that megaphone?
Right here.
All right, who's the next question? This man. Yes. What is the first project I was really proud of? That's a great question. I have to say, I think one of the first times I was doing something that didn't have anything to do with stuff I'd already seen was when I dragged 2 refrigerator boxes home. And cut them up and built a spaceship cockpit in my mom's bedroom closet. And I actually separated the windshield of my cockpit from the back of the wall by about 4 feet, and I put a light underneath, and I painted it black and put stars in there so I could sit there. I cut out holes in the cardboard dashboard and put acetate and colored gel, a light under that so my dashboard was lit up. And I still remember feeling deep pleasure at sitting there for hours pretending that I was flying through space. I think I was maybe 9 years old. That is, I really like that feeling of deep satisfaction. Yes, it's still something I chase every day. I swear, you know, it's like when you see me put on the costumes, that's not the last thing that I do. It's the reason I put the costume together. It's the whole purpose of the thing, that fantasy fulfillment, that diving into the thing. It's the reason that I do it every day. Yes, sir. How many people are working so we don't kill ourselves? Well, that's the largest number of people. We actually have a great guy. You know, we have this relationship with the insurance company. No, and amazingly, they've actually become more lenient with us over the years as the years progress, because we've gotten more expertise as we go. But luckily, we don't have to talk directly to the insurance company. We have a guy who does that for us. And his name is Nick Plache, and he works with his wife, Angie, and they do safety assessment and analysis. So every time we do a story, everything that we do, we actually check with them. We go over what our protocols are going to be. We come up with our minimum and maximum distances, whether we're going to be covered in the ceiling, et cetera. And then Nick calls up and calms down the claims adjusters. Now, his previous two shows he did this for were Fear Factor and Jackass. Which is pretty much what our show is if you throw in Mr. Science. The Mythbusters crew, which is now, many of them have been with us for the better part of a decade, is like a really tight family. It's about 20 people, 25 people in San Francisco. We have, we now have the largest team of builders we've ever had, Joe, Tori, and Miles. Those guys work in the shop with us. And if you see us drill like 1,000 holes, I will tell you, we drilled the first 10 and the last 10. But everything else that you see us build, when we're welding or building or carpentry or sewing, then Jamie and I are building that from start to finish. Joe, Tori, and Miles do a lot of the background sets. They do a lot of the setup stuff for us. And that's really great for us because it frees us up to get concentrated on the experimental design and the aesthetics and the storytelling that we want to do. Behind you in the red, oh yes, blue shirt.
What's the best thing you've done with duct tape?
What is the best thing I've done with duct tape? Get the last thing I did with duct tape. It's always the most recent thing. So we did Duct Tape Canyon. Did you see Duct Tape Canyon?
Yes.
Okay. So I really liked my limp, weird hot dog of a boat for that episode. And we really did ride it on a Class 5 rapid on the American River, which was scary as hell. Because the safety guys, these guys who take, you know, movie sets and all that out there, they were very nervous about it. And they said, you have to do several things when you're on the rapids. One is, if you go in the water, you have to keep your legs above the water level. Because if they're down, you can get stuck in a rock. And if you get stuck in a rock, you're just dead because they won't be able to find you. That's pretty scary to hear. Then they said, the problem with keeping your legs above the water is you're likely to go under right here. And if you go under here, there's this ramp and then you'll fly through the air. So you don't want to keep your legs above you here. So they had this already, they had a modification for the thing they said I had to do. So when I rode the boat on the rapid, I hit the spot they said would be dangerous. And sure enough, I went upside down. I came up, I gave the sign that I was okay, and then looked around. I thought, okay, legs above the water, unless I'm in that spot. Oh, I'm in that spot. Okay, go into the fetal position. And then I felt myself fly 6 feet through the air, land. I didn't hit anything, I didn't hurt anything. I came back up and gave the okay sign. The only thing I lost were my glasses because I forgot to put a safety restraint on them. It's the only time I've ever done that. They're somewhere downstream in the American River. We also lost a drone that day. And yeah, so the duct tape boat, I think it's traveling around now with the museum show, which I think is in Florida, if I'm not incorrect. All right, red shirt.
What is your greatest failure?
What is my greatest failure? Man, I have so many regrets. it's tricky. Yeah, you screw up things all the time in minor ways that are just intrinsic to the process. And then sometimes you screw up in really major ways. The worst screw-ups are the ones in which you hurt somebody else. And I don't mean physically. I mean where you promised something and you didn't deliver it. Those are the ones that stick with me. So I told this story a few years ago at Maker Faire, and you can go find it. I'm not going to tell it again right now. But, you know, I agreed to do a friend's student film back when I was 18, and I wasn't qualified to do what I'd agreed to do. And I didn't know commandment number 5, to ask for help. And before I knew how to ask for help, I was such a dick. Because, excuse me for using that language, but I really was. I thought I felt like I had one success behind me, and I was like, yeah, I can do anything. Give me something to do, I'll do it. And I made these big promises, and I totally screwed up. And I'm sure this guy has probably seen me talk about it and thinks that I'm profiting off of that failure and is probably pissed off about it. And I feel for him, because frankly, I still feel bad about it. Yes.
What do you think about the recent Star Wars
casting? I'm super excited about it. Look, there's one thing that I wanted in the prequels. Han Solo is one of the greatest characters in any movie ever. Right, because he's one of us. He's a maker. No. This one goes here, that one goes there. And Han Solo is not only a maker and a do-it-yourselfer and a MacGyver, but he's also the only person in the Star Wars films who's making fun of the movies while he's in them. And come on. I mean, I love Star Wars. I love Empire Strikes Back. I've heard there's a couple of others. I don't know what they are. But they need making fun of. Big, portentous, global, intergalactic epics are ridiculous. And you need someone making fun of that process. And the prequels suffered from nobody thumbing their nose at the film. So I long for the return of Han Solo. I long for the return of the Millennium Falcon. And thank God they gave Peter Mayhew a job, too. Chewbacca's going to be in the new episode. I'm just like, I can't. I'm beside myself. Where's the next one? Why does Jamie like what?
Funny myths.
Funny myths. Jamie hates funny myths. I don't know if he hates them. I don't know if he feels emotions that strongly. And Jamie's sense of humor is so not for television. It's really dark. But, I mean, so is mine. Next question.
What other shows are you
still doing? What other shows? Well, we're thinking of, we're currently looking at a show I'm really excited about, doing a space, another episode about space. Working with NASA, working with the scientists at NASA, and some rocket scientists to do some other space myths. I'm very excited about that. Starting, God, what are we doing next week? You know, wait a second, hold on. There's another Star Wars episode on our list of some more Star Wars myths that I'm very excited about. We love these movie myths. We have coming up, not next season, but shortly after that, the beginning of 2015. Is it 2014 right now? Yes, it is. In 2015, we've got this beautiful Raiders of the Lost Ark episode, which is one of the best things we've ever filmed, coming up. And as you can imagine, I might have put on a costume or two during the episode. Next question.
If you were on a desert island and could have one tool, what would it be?
My Leatherman. Yes, oh, if you haven't seen, so this is my Leatherman and my Leatherman holster, the one I didn't screw up. On tested.com last week, we posted a video. On Tested last week, we posted this video of me making a holster for my Leatherman, in which I totally screwed it up at the last minute. And then I redid it and made this one. The Leatherman, man, it is like I use it multiple times a day, every single day. If I had a Leatherman with me, I wouldn't need anything else. I'd have drinking water and clothing by the end of the week. Where is the next question coming from? I don't even know where the megaphone is.
Right under you.
Oh, okay. Go.
Would Jamie like being buried alive?
Oh. Did Jamie like being buried alive? No. In fact, actually, as sometimes happens to us, he was surprised to the degree to which he didn't like it. And I don't think it was the fact that there was dirt above him, and I don't think that it was the claustrophobia of the space, because neither Jamie or I are very claustrophobic at all. The real problem was the way the coffin he was in started to creak when 3,000 pounds of dirt got on top of it. That he found upsetting. I think I would too. My favorite, I couldn't, what is my favorite thing I've ever made? My children. Come on. That was a softball question.
What's your least favorite myth?
Ah, yes. Whoa, Hal, look at that. There we go. My least favorite myth. Oh, wow, there's all these people over here, too. Hi, everybody. I'm sorry I've been facing over here. I wasn't ignoring you on purpose. My least favorite story is we did this one about how to keep your razors sharp by putting them underneath a pyramid. That's ridiculous. that falls in the realm of supernatural, and it doesn't work. There was actually a recent tutorial about keeping your razors sharp by strapping them against your jeans, which totally does work, and you should totally try it. But yeah, Jamie and I don't go looking for Oogie Boogie myths. We don't look for ghosts. We don't look for Yetis. We don't look for Loch Ness monsters. Because they don't exist! And we're not interested in proving a negative. That's not, you know, all we'd end up proving if we tried to look for those is that we didn't know how to find one. That's not very scientific. We like to test things that we can sink our teeth into, that we can actually build a positive to test a negative. Oh, I'll tell you what we're doing next week. We're doing some myths from the A-team. And it turns out to be really, really difficult to get Jamie to wear gold chains. Even though, come on, if anybody would be B.A. Baraka standing for bad attitude, it would be Mr. Heinemann. Yeah, the Tory Grant Miles actually painted us, sorry, Tory Joe and Miles actually painted us up an A-team van, which is so awesome. It's like fulfilling my deep 14-year-old fantasy, being a member of the A-team. Yes?
What's the largest thing you've ever made?
The largest thing? That's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, we've built experiments that had to take place over a mile or two, but as far as actually large objects, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, wow. You know, Rocket Car, given the scope of Rocket Car, was by far the biggest experiment we'd ever set up. I mean, we're on a lake bed 2 miles by 4 miles, and we needed every bit of that lake bed to make that thing work. But as far as actual size of builds, I'm going to have to think about that one. If I come up with an answer, I'm going to post it on Tested, okay? Okay. Next question.
What is one skill that you know now that you wish you would have known when you first got into making?
One skill. So when I was first making stuff, I was 18, I was living in New York City, and I remember very specifically seeing a friend of mine had built a project that was welded. And I was 18, and I thought to myself, well, it's too late for me to learn how to weld. How stupid is that? That's ridiculous, especially when welders are basically hot glue guns that spew steel. Don't get me wrong. I know that there's TIG welding and other oxy welding and stuff like that is much more complex and much more difficult to do. But a basic MIG welder is, it's totally trivial. So the idea that I would tell my 18-year-old self, well, that ship has sailed, is so stupid. It was just idiotic. And it wasn't so much a skill as much as I wish I had had that understanding back then that, you know, all I need to do to learn how to weld is go find someone with a welder and ask them for an hour of their time. The fact is, when you ask people who do stuff how to do what they do, they're dying to talk about it. Makers love to talk endlessly about their projects, as a wife of any maker will tell you, or the husband of any maker will tell you. And it's such a pleasure to go into your problem solving and talk about how you did what you did. Again, I go back, ask. Next question.
What, in your opinion, was the stupidest, craziest thing you've ever done?
What is the stupidest or craziest thing I've ever done? Gotten up here? Yeah, that's close. That might be there. Whoa. That looks scarier to you guys than it does to me, I'm sure. You know, that water slide wipeout felt pretty stupid when we were doing it. It also felt pretty scary. Escaping from an underwater car also seems pretty crazy now, considering how upsetting it was to actually do it. Although one of the space things we want to do is see if you can get out of a spacesuit underwater like Sandra Bullock does at the end of Gravity, which you totally can't, which means that I'm a little scared of trying it. And yet the opportunity to put on a spacesuit and be thrown into a pond sounds like too much fun to pass up. So I'll probably do it. Next question.
What's the grossest thing you've done?
The grossest? Oh, that's easy. Cleaning up a turd on the front steps of Jamie's shop. No, that was the second grossest. The, The grossest thing we did was well, we did this story about a guy who died in a Corvette, and it was like a classic car, and he was cleaned out of the car, and the car was sold. And so the myth is that you could still sell a car even if someone died in it. So we took a pair of full-size pigs that had died of natural causes. We drove them from the farm they were on to our Corvette, and we put them inside the Corvette, and we sealed the Corvette, and we put it inside a container, and we sealed the container for 3 months. Did I mention the container was rented? And then after 3 months, we unsealed it. Now, there was a couple of problems with just getting the car to where we could start to film with it, because it was in a container in which we'd backed it up and pulled the emergency brake. But now the emergency brake was underneath this pig, which was no longer a pig. It was more like a pig-shaped mound of hairy, bony pudding that smelled worse than anything you've ever smelled in your life. And I know that there are people you've smelled, if you've actually ever smelled a truly dead and rotting thing, you never forget it. And you can smell the tiniest hint of it on the wind, and it'd be something like, something died over there. So Jamie had to get in the car and sit on the pig, or rather in the pig, and reach sort of through it to release the emergency brake. Now, he had a gas mask, but it didn't have air being pumped into it, which was a problem because there was no air in the Corvette. It was all ammonia. So he started choking and he had to open all the windows, reach across the, it was the most, I've never seen Jamie so unhappy. And I've seen Jamie pretty unhappy. I also tried to eat ribs that day for lunch, which might be the stupidest thing I've ever done. Next question.
How did it feel like falling into the dumpster in one of your episodes?
Falling into the dumpster. Oh, that's a great question. So we did this episode called Dumpster Diving, in which Jamie and I wanted to experiment with. In the movies, the hero, when he's escaping from a crowd, always jumps off the third story into a dumpster that's right there. So how easy is that really? So the first thing we did was we went to the San Francisco dump, which, by the way, has an artisan residence program that I always wanted to be. But we went to the San Francisco dump, and we said, just show us three random dumpsters. And they pointed to these three, and I got into one and started looking through it. We wanted to find out how soft the dumpster was. Unfortunately, the dumpster I jumped into was full of medical waste, which is not very soft, nor anything you want to jump into. Then we actually found a dumpster from a mattress factory. Now, that is something you do want to jump into. But then we had this stuntman teach Jamie and I how to jump off of a building, which is pretty much one of the worst things to do. I mean, when you're doing it, when you're standing on the edge, and what is this, about 14 feet? So on the in the episode, I was standing probably about here, almost 20 feet. And you have your feet at the edge, and you don't jump off because you'll go way too far out. You actually, what's done called this, you take a great step. Scuba divers do it too. You take a great step. You just take one step forward, and then you drop. And then, now if you get to that point, because your whole body has all of its alarms going off, and they're saying, don't do this. This is ridiculous. You're not supposed to jump off buildings. Get this huge adrenaline rush. And then you jump off the building. Now, once you are in air, the first thing you have to do is go completely horizontal with your back to the ground, facing up, and your arms and legs spread akimbo. Now, that is the last thing in the world you want to do when you're falling through the air. So in every way, you have to resist all of these natural impulses to do it. I'm really glad we did it because, you know, I got to fulfill my fantasy of being an action hero for an afternoon. But I was also physically ill by the end of the day from the adrenaline rush. It turns out I'm not an adrenaline junkie. We actually, Jamie and I did this story a few months ago. We were bobbing for apples from the end of a bungee rope. It was based on this commercial that we had found, and we thought, well, how possible is that? Now, I'm just also going to say, like, paintball, not a sport for me. Bungee jumping is awful. Bungee jumping is awful, and it makes me sick, and even Jamie gave up after a while. Even Jamie got to a point where he said, I can't take this anymore, and I tell you, I don't think I've ever heard those words from Jamie.
What was it like watching a cement truck blow up?
You know, the weirdest thing about watching explosions from a great distance is that you can't hear them. And what I mean is that we were about a mile away from the cement truck when it blew up. It took 8.5 seconds for the shockwave from the cement truck to actually reach us. So what we saw was, and we were looking around, and then you could see the shockwave travel across the water, and it slammed into us. It was really like getting hit in the chest. And here's this really funny part, is the cameraman screwed up and missed the shot of our reaction to the dump truck. So you've seen that reaction in the episode a million times of Jamie jumping back from the dump truck blowing up. Totally fake tape. And Jamie's actually really proud of his acting in that performance because it looks really real. Yeah, sometimes we have to do stuff again. I've got time for three more questions.
What was the most uncomfortable myth you've ever done?
There's so many. Do you know that when you're in the back of an F-18 Hornet and throwing up repeatedly, that's why your flight suit has so many pockets? One for every barf bag? You think I'm joking. I'm totally not joking. It totally works like that. You know, it's the uncomfortable part I can deal with. It's actually being cold that is the worst. We've worked at 118 degrees. Fahrenheit, we've worked at 40 below. And 40 below, by the way, that's where the Celsius and Fahrenheit scales cross. So 40 below means 40 below, whether you're talking Celsius or Fahrenheit. And being cold is much worse than being overly warm. We've learned through hard experience over the years to get really good wool socks and heated boots and layer to work in that cold. We did a story years ago called Whirlpool of Death, where, I spun around in a whirlpool to see if it would suck me down, which it totally did. And also the spinning around made me sick, so I threw up in my own pool, which was gross and awful. But the worst part of that episode wasn't that. It was actually that we were working out on the island of Alameda, and the wind was about this strong, about 20 miles per hour, coming from the north, actually, like this. And it was raining, but in that pissy, crappy San Francisco rain that's not really committed to being rain, but it's just rainy enough to make you wet, but not rainy enough to make you hold up an umbrella. So eventually you're totally soaked through to the skin and you can't get warm. And, oh, by the way, we're working on slippery scaffolding 18 feet off the ground. That was pretty much the most uncomfortable we've been. One more question.
Can I take a selfie with you?
If you can take it from there, I don't think you can cut. You're allowed for insurance reasons to come on up here. Again, I'm signing autographs nearby here. Over there. In the SketchUp booth. I'm signing autographs at the SketchUp booth over there right after this for an hour. You guys can take pictures with me. I'll sign stuff and we can talk. One more question.
Okay, here's a question. What's the one show you really want to do it, don't think it's ever
going to
happen?
Well, you know, there are still some people who believe that man did not go to the moon. So, frankly, the only way to shut those idiots up is to actually go to the moon. Now, of course, we'd have to make our own rocket to do that because we're the Mythbusters. We get a little help. I mean, it's not like it's rocket science. Wait, it is rocket science. So, you know, we'd relive our Andy Griffith dreams of being Salvage One, go to the moon, pick up a piece of Apollo hardware, photograph it, leave it where it was, because those are all National Heritage sites and you don't want to mess with them, but prove that we'd actually been there, come on home, high five everybody, and we'd never have to listen to that crap again. Thank you guys so much. I'll see you over at the SketchUp booth. I love Maker Faire. I'll see you guys next year.